This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Public utilities are, by definition, services that just about everybody needs access to. Water, sewer, gas, and electricity. In most places, local government provides the pipes and regulates the price of what comes through them. Now, a few cities treat wireless high-speed internet access the same way. In Philadelphia, for example, the square mile around Independence Hall became a Wi-Fi hotspot earlier this month. Dayton, Ohio, celebrates its new Wi-Fi zone this coming weekend. It costs these governments money to build and maintain this Wi-Fi blanket. Advocates say it serves the common good in many ways, not least in polishing a city's image as home to 21st century technology. Critics say local governments are sticking their technological noses where they do not belong and stifling both competition and innovation. Later in the program, an initiative that would effectively bar registered sex offenders from living in Miami Beach, Florida. Mayor David Dermer will join us. But first, the pros and cons of Wi-Fi as a public utility. If your city or town already offers this access, call and tell us what the reaction's been. Is this an appropriate arena for local government, or is it something better left to the private sector? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Ed Schwartz, a member of the Executive Committee of Wireless Philadelphia, the advisory group set up to help make the project happen in that city. He's with us from his office in Philadelphia. Nice of you to join us on Talk of the Nation.
Thanks for the opportunity.
So Wireless Philadelphia is this initial idea of a Wi-Fi zone within a square mile of Independence Hall.
Well, that's right. But I think what happened is that Diana Neff, our chief information officer, proposed that we do this citywide. And the mayor decided that that was a good idea, but to show what was possible, to move quickly on getting an area called Love Park right in the center of town to be a hot zone, and then the broader area that you describe. And that was done rather quickly so that people could see how feasible it was and how much benefit it offered.
Well, all right. How much benefit does it offer?
I think it offers people in the future and businesses the opportunity to communicate, share information, and make use of other resources that are online that are part of our lives and will be an increasing part of our lives wherever they are in Philadelphia, certainly wherever they are outdoors, and with a little bit of massaging wherever they are indoors. And this becomes as important to the future of a city as establishing telephone service was years ago, or electricity, which was in part done in different areas of the country by public power, TVA, and all the rest of that.
Mm-hmm.
So this opens the door to the future in a way that if we don't do it, eventually it'll happen, but we're going to do it more quickly.
And how much is this going to cost?
Well, the initial expenditure is to lay the antenna. And everybody thinks this is a really complicated project. Governments have had difficulties, but I don't think putting up streetlights has been among them. So there's between a $10 to $15 million cost associated with that. But the way the city of Philadelphia is proposing to do this involves creating a nonprofit organization with appointments made by the mayor and by themselves and independent of the city, which in turn will borrow the money through some kind of bond issue and pay it back over the next 5 or 6 years from revenues that they're able to obtain by charging for the use of the service. So it's being set up as a business deal, really, run by a nonprofit, and it will not cost the city of Philadelphia very much at all, except insofar as some staff time has been devoted to developing the plan and will be devoted to helping to implement it. But that's already part of our budget.
Mm-hmm. So has that quelled the fears of critics?
Well, it's ironic. Some of the critics are people in the private, a couple of companies in the private sector who've said, you know, you can't do this, and besides, it doesn't make any sense to do. Well, if it doesn't make any sense to do, why are they so concerned that we're doing it? I think some critics have been quelled, but the fact is that we'll continue, but the fact is that in the city of Philadelphia and around not only the country but the world, there has been enormous approval of this, and if there was any uncertainty, That was laid to rest when the city made its rather complete and technically excellent proposal a couple of weeks ago. And at that point, both newspapers here just came out with glowing endorsements of this plan, as did a lot of other people. So there are always critics, but I think we have enormous support in the city for doing this.
One of the questions that always comes up in this context is that of the digital divide. Obviously, better off people can afford laptops and the monthly fees that they have to pay to internet service providers. That doesn't come with the hot zone there. This doesn't address that issue, does it?
Well, no, that's not true. It does. And in fact, one of the primary objectives that the city has is in using this as a vehicle to reduce the digital divide. It does it in, I think, a couple of ways. First, when we finally do get around after in about a year to start awarding contracts for ISPs that will...
Internet service providers.
Yeah, internet service providers, my apologies, to offer these services, we will have a board making those decisions that will have affordability as a major criteria. Private company won't. They will. And so there will be an eye toward making sure that people throughout the city can afford it. Secondly, right now, as we set it up, there are some low-income neighborhoods that, in fact, are being wired to have this done for free. Third, the revenues that this project generates are going to be used, as we see it, for training and acquiring computers and the other things that we need to do to help low-income people go online and use this resource. And finally, the City of Philadelphia's involvement in this makes it a city priority. And the administration has made it quite clear that its reasons for doing this are as much to close the digital divide as to enable college graduates and businesses and others, professionals who can take advantage of this now, to be able to do that. So this is very, very much at the center of the city's agenda.
Ed Schwartz, thanks very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Ed Schwartz, a member of the Wireless Philadelphia Executive Committee, also president of the Institute for the Study of Civic Values, and he joined us by phone from his office in Philadelphia. Well, with us to give us a bigger picture on this topic is Declan McCullough. He's the chief political correspondent for CNetNews.com. He's joined us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Let's start with Philadelphia, obviously a fairly major city. Is this a unique situation there, or will other cities follow Philadelphia's footsteps?
I think what other cities are looking at is Philadelphia is a test case. If it works there, if the politics work out there, then other cities might follow. Philadelphia is using 802.11b, that is Wi-Fi technology, to try to blanket 135 square miles eventually. And this raised some political hackles. The local internet service providers, such as Verizon, said, well, isn't this what we're supposed to be doing? And so it went up to the state level, and Democratic Governor Ed Rundell signed a bill at the end of...
Former mayor of Philadelphia.
Quite right. Should know what's going on. Signed a bill late last year that said basically, okay, cities, you can go ahead and do two things. First, cities in Pennsylvania. First, if it's for free, no restrictions. You can go ahead and offer service as long as you don't charge for it. The second thing is that if you do want to charge for it, then you have to go to your local telecommunications company, basically Verizon in Philadelphia's case, and see if Verizon wants to offer that service first. If Verizon chooses not to, then it's all yours. And that raised a big stink.
Now, we'll be hearing from Verizon a little bit later in the program. Smaller places, other towns are doing this as well.
That's right. It's not just Philadelphia. This is something that is becoming, at least it's the early stages of becoming a trend. People want internet connections in their homes. And it's not just homes. If you're outside your home in a park, if you're walking down the street, there are a lot of services that are actually very useful to have if you have a wireless connection in your handheld device. I mean, imagine next generation cell phones and wristwatches. It's very, very nice to have a city where you have wireless all over the place.
Let's get a caller in on this. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's begin with Jim, who's with us from McCall, Idaho.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am a rural ISP and, of course, a small resort town in rural Idaho. And I have a middle-of-the-road solution going with my local community. We provide our downtown area with a wireless hotspot, or I like to call it a hot zone since it's larger than one hotspot. And mm-hmm. We actually use some city property for some antennas and things like that. In exchange, the city gets free service on that hot zone for their police, for the library, for organizations like that. And what I get is the job of taking care of it, of building it, of keeping it up to date. And then I get the subscriber income from people that come in for a day or for an hour or for a whole month or a monthly plan. So it seems to be a pretty good workable solution. This, our city that's always strapped for money, didn't have the money to develop this but wanted the kind of service in our town. So,
and are you making money off of this?
Oh, you know, it's kind of a break-even thing for me. I also do the fixed wireless, you know, bouncing out 15 miles to a house out
sure, yeah.
rural neck of the woods. And it certainly has gotten my name around in the community, and I think it's probably been a net gain for me. But in terms of if that was my whole business plan, I'd probably go broke pretty
okay.
quick.
Well, Declan McCullough, we just have a few seconds left in this segment, but is that sort of compromise plan is also happening in various places?
In a way, there's the problem with having governments do this, and I followed this over the last decade when governments are trying to figure out how to wire communities, is that by the time these things get approved, they tend to be a generation or two behind in technology. Philadelphia is using a very old version, 802.11b. It's not using 802.11g or the latest 802.16, and so they're actually not doing the latest, newest thing, and so they might have to rip everything out in a few years.
Okay. Jim, thanks very much for the phone call. Good luck to you.
Oh, sure. Thanks a lot.
We're going to be back with more on this after a short break. Again, our phone number, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email TOTN at NPR.org. We promise our phone and our email are the very latest technology. Back after the break, I'm Neil Conan. It's NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about how some communities as large as Philadelphia are offering residents free high-speed internet access. Our guest is Declan McCullough, chief political correspondent for CNetNews.com. And, of course, you're invited to join us. Do you think internet access should be treated like a utility, or is this best left in private hands? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is TOTN at NPR.org. And just before the break, Declan McCullough, you were talking about technology in the level of technology in various places. In Philadelphia's case, you say it's old technology. The criticism is, as you know, that this would freeze in that old technology and prevent innovation.
That's a valid concern, not just in Philadelphia's case, but anytime any government, any municipality is trying to offer some sort of wireless or broadband links. Intel just announced last week, I covered their announcement, that they're starting to ship the 802.16 standard, which is a wireless connection that can offer ranges of up to 30 miles. That's 30 miles as opposed to a few hundred feet in the case of Philly's 802.11b connection, and also the speeds are almost 10 times as fast. And so once you adopt something like that, it's going to require a whole lot of town council meetings or city council meetings to change that standard.
And a fair amount of money?
You're going to have to include all new base stations and access points. So yeah, the cost to upgrade are very, very substantial.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Ralph. Ralph's calling from San Francisco.
Yeah, hi. I would like to say that people don't have to wait for the city governments to do that. There are wireless community networks in many places, such as San Francisco, New York City, Austin, Seattle, and others, and it's just a bunch of people putting up antennas on their houses and connecting with each other. There's a whole directory of these groups at freenetworks.org, and and the website also tells you how to start a wireless community network in wherever you live.
Are wireless community networks, are they a viable alternative to these municipal projects?
I love the idea of wireless community networks. I mean, these folks are doing some of the most interesting things around, the more so because it's a volunteer project. I confess that I'm not sure how well they'll scale. If you try to have millions of people connecting to one of these networks, you're going to need much more bandwidth than the wireless community networks so far have been able to support for basically free. So I think it doesn't scale that well outside of a community level.
Thanks very much for the call, Ralph. Eric Rabe joins us now from his office in New York. He's Vice President for Media Relations at Verizon, and thanks very much for joining us today.
Glad to be here, Neil.
I know you have doubts about the feasibility of projects like Wireless Philadelphia. Are you concerned simply that, your competitors, you get frozen out?
Well, we certainly understand the appeal of these networks, and indeed I'd say nobody has done more than Verizon to make broadband service widely available. In Philadelphia, for example, we cover about 96% of the access lines that we have in the city, which is the entire city, and our competitor Comcast similarly covers all of the city with broadband. So broadband is clearly very much available in Philadelphia. But there's a great attractiveness to a wireless service, and indeed many of our customers use a wireless router on the end of their DSL network because it is so handy to have wireless around your house.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to say that there are some serious issues for any community to consider if they're thinking about going into this.
Like?
For example, the one that Declan just mentioned, these technologies basically need to be upgraded every 2 to 3 years. A private provider would do that as a matter of business course. It might be more difficult for a city to do it. There certainly are expenses for cities in doing these kinds of networks, and many cities have budget problems, including Philadelphia, we might add. And then there are issues of customer service. So there's billing if you're going to charge for it. Somebody has to be there to help a customer fix it if it goes bad during the middle of the night. These are the kinds of things that operators like Verizon or Comcast or many of the others who are out there do as a routine basis, but which are big projects and not necessarily easy to do, and they're expensive. So I think, a city looking at this needs to go into it with their eyes open and also recognize that there are a number of places around the country that have tried this and have found it to be a burden to the community financially or for other reasons and have either gotten out of the business or wish they could. And, of course, then you get into another issue, which is if you put this up, you want it to be a long-term sustainable network. You don't want something that you're going to have up for a year or two, and then it's going to go away. So you're getting into a situation here which is going to be a multi-year project, and, is that something that the city wants to do? But in the case of particularly rural communities where maybe for whatever reason a provider like Verizon hasn't made it yet, this may be an alternative that's of interest, and in those cases we would invite people to in those towns to call us and let's talk about what kind of a joint deal we might be able to work out. We've done that in a number of smaller towns, and it's worked quite nicely. So I think there are alternatives to having the city just go out and deploy this network, which are every bit as attractive, and I would say more attractive, than having the city do it.
Here's an email question from Boyd in Salt Lake City, Utah. One problem I have with the private sector is its complete lack of accountability towards service. I've been having a very difficult time with my local cable company's internet service, but there's no other option for high-speed cable in my area. The management at the cable company does not seem to care that many users complain on a daily basis. At the very least, government is responsible to the public, and via elections, the public can easily influence government.
Well, customer service is the big challenge of American business today, but I would say it's a big challenge of American government as well. And I think that same kind of email might well have been written about Motor Vehicle Bureau in some particular place or another. So it's not just business that has difficulty doing this. But in most places in the country, there actually is choice for broadband, at least between the local telephone operator like Verizon and the local cable company. And then there are, as another caller to your program pointed out, a variety of places where there are individuals or small companies or just consumer groups putting up their own wireless networks.
Those community networks. Let's get another caller on the line. And this is Utam. Utam's calling from Boise, Idaho. I hope I pronounced your name correctly.
Yes, you did, Neil. Hi, Neil. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
My question to you, to the person who is from Verizon, is that isn't it going to hit their revenues and therefore forming the basis for the criticism that is coming from paid internet service providers such as Verizon and other cable companies?
Eric Rabe?
Well, I wouldn't pull any punches about our thought that we probably shouldn't be competing with governments, but we, you know, governments have advantages that private business doesn't have, and if a private business, whether it's Verizon or somebody else, puts up the capital to deploy a network, it seems in our American system at least, that we usually don't have the government competing with them. You know, when the government decided, for example, that people needed help buying food, they didn't set up grocery stores. They provided another alternative to get food to people. So I think there are better ways to do it than that, but that's not really
obviously not the same model they followed with water in many places, though.
Well, yes, that's true, but I don't think we're talking about a public utility here. Now, maybe some people will argue with that, but we don't see it that way.
Oh, Tom, thanks very much for the phone call.
You're very welcome. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
And I did want to ask you, Eric Rabe, as you look to the future of this in Philadelphia, do you worry that you're going to be losing customers, as Utam and others have suggested? And how does this affect the Internet service providers?
Verizon's a big company, and I think, you know, we can compete in Philadelphia as we compete everywhere else and hopefully be able to do okay in the business. I think this is, frankly, a larger concern to smaller companies that may have more limited territories and perhaps only serve one or two cities. And if those cities begin to compete in this area and have the advantages that cities have, those companies could be in more grave problems than Verizon would be. So, you know, we'll compete. We'll do what's necessary. In the Philadelphia case, actually, you know, we've said that we'll be happy to have Philadelphia go ahead with this project, and we, in fact, are involved in the trials that they have underway now to see if we can help in some way to make this happen. So, you know, we'll proceed ahead, and, you know, we'll see how it works out.
Eric Rabe, thanks very much. Eric Rabe is Verizon's Vice President for Media Relations. He joined us by phone from his office in New York. Let's get another caller on the line. Matthew's with us. Matthew calling from Baton Rouge.
Yeah, hi. I love the show and listen to it all day at work.
Oh, thank you.
And I had a question is not just for the, you know, ISP companies, but the companies that use the internet, wireless internet, to attract customers, such as the small community coffee shops or, you know, businesses around campuses that use that type of service to bring customers in. How would that affect them?
Declan McCullough, how is the coffee shops, a lot of Starbucks advertise, for example, their Wi-Fi hotspots?
It depends on how it's set up, is the short answer. You're going to have much better connectivity just at a technological level if you have an antenna a few feet from you inside a Starbucks than if you have one on a telephone pole a few blocks away or even on the same block. And so there still might be some incentive to go to Starbucks. But, yeah, if I were Starbucks and I spent millions of dollars rolling out this network and I have pretty much all of my coffee shops in metro areas wired, I'd be a little worried that the government's stepping in and going to do something that maybe makes my coffee shops less valuable as a hangout spot.
So it could be a problem, Matthew.
Thanks for the comment. I do appreciate it.
Thanks for the call. And let's try Scott. And Scott's with us from Minneapolis.
Yes, I had a question about wireless as a public utility and how privacy plays into that. If a city gets into wireless internet, does the government become like Big Brother and monitor your safety and your passwords and your personal information like the through the Patriot Act or something like that?
Yeah, can this stuff be intercepted easily, Declan?
It's an excellent question, and the because it raises the civil liberties questions. Basically, private and sector companies may be more privacy protective than government ones. We had Earthlink, that internet service provider, a lawyer for Earthlink testifying before Congress was the first to reveal the existence of the FBI's carnivore surveillance project. And so you probably wouldn't have that if it were a government official up there testifying. Also, in terms of blocking sites, you start getting into free speech concerns. Maybe Philadelphia considers some sites inappropriate for some members of society, so just block that off. You have questions when you're dealing with a government enterprise that you don't have with the private sector.
Would just to anticipate a subject that's coming up a little later in the program, as you say, access to some kinds of sites is controversial. Would this be able to block access to some sites within, 2,500 feet of a public school, for example?
Yes, it could.
Yes, it could. All right. Interesting question. Scott, thanks very much.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Let's have an email question, this one from Bob. I'm a founder of La Canada Wireless Association, which covers unserved rural areas near Santa Fe, New Mexico. We now have over 100 members. Our rates go down, not up. Our monthly membership fee is $40. We're looking at dropping that to $30, even $25. We're all volunteer. Currently have 3 megabits of upstream bandwidth. I understand we're one of the more successful community efforts in the United States. This, like our earlier caller from San Francisco, one of these community wireless areas. So thank you very much for that. We're talking about innovations in Wi-Fi. Is it a public utility? You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. As we mentioned earlier, several communities have already put a municipal internet in place. One of them, the city of Chaska, Minnesota. Brad Mayer is Information Services Manager for Chaska. He joins us now by phone. Nice of you to be with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So how does this work in Chaska?
Well, it works pretty fantastic, actually, in Chaska. You know, in essence, what we've done is we've created a gigantic Wi-Fi hotspot that covers the entire city of Chaska.
Why did you take this on?
Well, for us, you know, there was a couple of reasons. You know, one of the reasons was obviously is the DSL and cable providers that are incumbent in town were unable to provide or unwilling to provide service to all areas of the city. So we wanted to be able to build a system that could hit 100% of the households in Chaska. So probably the more compelling reason that we really looked at doing this was it kind of comes down to the whole idea or concept behind bridging a digital divide, and that is we wanted to ensure that every resident in Chaska had the equal access to an affordable broadband solution.
Well, you're obviously happy with what you're doing thus far. Any unforeseen problems, though?
Not really. I mean, you know, the system itself has worked very, very well for us. You know, we are dealing with a Wi-Fi type wireless system, and so, you know, there is going to be problems that are common to Wi-Fi installations, but because of the system that we're using, we've actually been able to work around those problems very, very well.
As we heard earlier from Declan McCullough, it's likely that that system, whatever it is that you're using now, is going to be a little out of date a couple of 3 years down the road.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, yeah. I mean, we chose to implement the 802.11b system, and even though that gentleman had indicated that it's old technology, there's millions and millions of those 802.11b Wi-Fi devices out there today. It's one of the most accepted standards out there right now when it comes to wireless networking. But we fully believe or fully understand that you know, the technologies do change quite rapidly, and that, you know, within 2 or 3 years we'll be looking at the next generation, whether that be WiMAX, 802.11n. Whatever new technology is going to be out there, we're going to be prepared to move toward that.
Even if the cost is substantial.
That's correct.
Uh-huh. So what are the benefits that justify those costs?
Well, like I say, the city of Chaska has always been a very progressive city. We've always tried to do as much as we can to make Chaska one of the best small towns, well, in the nation, if nothing else. And so we've always tried to do things progressively that will enhance the quality of life in Chaska. We see the Wi-Fi system as just another extension of that, and that we can provide broadband access to even the low-income population base that would normally not have access to that service at all.
Well, let's get another caller on the line. This is Rob. Rob's calling from Cleveland, Ohio.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I want to make a couple points. Number one, I think that these Wi-Fi systems or mesh systems are also being used for safety. I know that in New Orleans they have put a system in place in high crime areas and in 6 months reduced crime by 57% with wireless cameras. Number one, and I know that I've also read that police in San Mateo, et cetera, are able to go around with laptops in their cars.
Mm-hmm.
The other point I wanted to make is regarding the scalability. I think with some of these equipment suppliers And I know one of them has radios like Tropos. They are set up where this will scale to WiMAX. So someone like Chaska is going to be able to do that, or Philadelphia. And I believe in Chaska, I'm in Cleveland, I think in Chaska they're charging like $16 a month for broadband wireless internet access, and I wish I had it here, and I think it's coming with One Cleveland, but it's a pretty good thing, and it's lowering the cost, and it's important because I think the United States is 13th in broadband right now.
Rob, thanks very much for the call.
You're welcome.
We're going to have to stop this for the moment. We'll resume this conversation after a short break and take more of your questions about the internet as a public utility. Then we'll talk with the mayor of Miami Beach, Florida, who's got a plan to keep convicted sex offenders from living inside the city limits. That's after the break. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're going to finish our discussion about how free internet access, wireless access, affects users and businesses that usually offer that services. Our guest is Declan McCullough, chief political correspondent for CNetNews.com, and Brad Mayer, information services manager for the city of Chaska, Minnesota, which runs Chaska.net. And just before the break, Brad Mayer, one of our callers, was saying your price is about $16 per month. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. We actually have a couple different price points, but our lowest end is $15.99 per month, and then we have a slightly more expensive model, which is $24.99 for business users.
And as you look around the country, Declan McCullough, is that going to be a price that most people in these kind of municipal systems might look forward to?
In that range, yes. I mean, you can imagine that, like New York famously did a few years ago. You might have small areas like one or two parks or right outside City Hall that might be free. The FCC does that here in Washington. But if you want to put it up all over the entire city, it's going to cost something, and that's the type of price point that I'm hearing.
Let's get another caller on the line. Greg. Greg joins us from Harpersville in New York.
Yes. Hello, Neil.
Hi.
My question is, I'm a Democrat, so I do believe in slightly larger government, and I believe that government should provide services. However, I also believe that over my lifetime, I have watched prices for long distance come down, prices for telephone service come down, simply out of competition, which is probably a Republican ideal. But what's going to win out there? Are we going to have the reliability of government bureaucracy supplied internet service, or are we going to have cheap internet service because of competition, the way AT&T and MCI and Sprint and everybody competed over long distance?
Declan McCullough, I guess this gets to the fundamental philosophical difference here.
It does. It goes to what is the best way that we as a society have found over the long run to keep prices down? And the answer to that is simple: competition. There's no better way to do it. You can see how quickly long-distance prices have fallen in just a decade. You can see how quickly computer prices are falling because competition is cutthroat in those areas.
And I just wonder, was this an issue you thought about at all, Brad Mayer, when Chaska was deciding to go? I mean, Chaska is obviously a fairly small place.
Well, certainly. I mean, I think that, you know, the ultimate goal is to have the lowest possible cost on something like the internet. And I think, competition is going to be good. I think that private industry should be involved in this. But I think what we're probably seeing is we're seeing a lot of cities out there that are, A, saying private companies aren't coming in and doing it, or B, they're not going to come in and you know, they're not going to have any kind of a desire to provide a cost-effective service. So I think with the cities getting involved in it, it's going to kind of force the private companies to take a second look and to actually become competitive. For instance, we have one cable provider in the city of Chaska. You have no options, and if you want cable modem service, you get it from one provider. And so there is no incentive for that cable provider to lower their prices at all because they have the market. So I think cities becoming involved are really going to push that competition and push those prices lower all across the board.
Greg, thanks for the call.
Neil, could I ask one more question?
Sure.
Do we, if we go the capitalism way where it's competition, do we lock out people who are low income and don't have the economic ability to get what they need?
Would that come about, Declan?
It's a fair question, and one answer to that might be something like broadband vouchers for those who are truly less fortunate. But also the broader question is, look at inventions like washing machines, air conditioning. These were once the province of the wealthy, and then over time they became very, very affordable. And the same thing is going to happen with internet technology.
Greg, again, thank you for the call. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Neil.
And I'd also like to thank Brad Mayer for his time today.
Yes, thanks for having me on.
Brad Mayer, Information Service Manager at the City of Chaska, Minnesota, and Chaska.net. And our thanks also to Declan McCullough, Chief Political Correspondent for CNetNews.com, who joined us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much.
You're quite welcome.